From WXXI Rochester and the Innovation Trail, this is Innovation Conversation. Many upstate communities are anchored by universities. They draw in students and breathe life into the region, but they also create jobs, fresh ideas, and new companies. The question is, how well is the upstate economy capitalizing on its academic institutions? I'm Bob Smith, inviting you to join us as we find out today on Innovation Conversation, Higher Ed's Impact. We'll be speaking with experts from Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse, plus questions and input from you. That's Innovation Conversation, Higher Ed's Impact, coming up after this news. Welcome to the Innovation Conversation. I'm Bob Smith. As you hear us today across upstate New York, we're going to be talking about the special role that higher education will play in future economic development. We're going to be welcoming to the program today Syracuse University Vice President Marilyn Higgins, RIT Venture Creations Business Incubation Director Bill Jones, and here in our Rochester studio, Buffalo Niagara Enterprise Chief Executive Tom Kuharski. And I welcome you all to the program, and thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Marilyn. How are you?
Good.
Now, I want to begin, if I can, with what may be an underlying implicit premise of our conversation, and correct me if I'm wrong in this regard. Does the private sector economy now need encouragement from the education and research community in a way it never has before? And is it really, at this point, opening up and asking for that help? And I'm going to begin with Ms. Higgins.
I think right now, given the economic downturn, I would say that it's more important than ever that there be closer ties between academia and the business community. We're certainly seeing more of it in Syracuse. And there's tremendous openness on all fronts, from the entrepreneurship level to the R&D level to community development and investment in that way. I think universities have really gotten quite involved in a whole number of different aspects.
Now, from your point of view, Bill Jones, you were at work, of course, with one of the major research universities of the upstate region. From your point of view, what kind of feedback are you getting and what kind of response are you getting from the business community? Are they reaching out to you? Do you find yourself mostly doing the outreach? Or how is it? How's that relationship? How's that equation going?
I think right now it's mostly we're reaching out, but I think we're on a cusp of a cultural change where you've got things in Boston where there's a much better connection between the private industries and the university. RIT does have the Center for Integrated Manufacturing Studies, which is a direct link between the applied research at RIT and the private community. But in terms of the incubator, we're still seeing a lot of small startups, kind of traditional rather than growing businesses looking to set up kind of their own startups or development arms. But I expect that to change over the next 5 years as the corporate research budget gets reduced and they all get more creative.
Tom Kuharski, you're a representative of a group whose constituents are, in fact, the business community of,
right,
of Western New York, and specifically the Niagara Frontier region, the Buffalo and Niagara Falls area. From your point of view, what do your constituents say about the role they expect universities like, for example, in your backyard, State University at Buffalo, to play?
Well, I think I agree with my two colleagues. I look at it when trying to recruit and grow and start up businesses in our region. It really, the role of higher education is twofold. It really is one to be a community asset that acts as a partner for business development. And in Western New York, with UB, with Canisius, with Niagara University, with the community colleges, we have all sorts of programs, science and technology transfer, medical collaboratives with the new vascular center, Department of Engineering, computer science. A number of those are partnering with business, but a number of them are also working with the school districts and the school system, K through 12, BOCES and community colleges, to start to prepare the workforce for the new technology innovation that we're seeing companies engage in all fields of industry.
Now, that's probably the one area of the business academic nexus that most people are most familiar with and that's been front and center for the longest, and that is the university, the college community, as the developer of future talent for corporate America. It's been very good at that, certainly, no question about it. And obviously, though, you want more now than just a pipeline for talent, don't you?
Well, I'll field that one. I think you do, and that's why there are various programs that higher education is engaging in. I think we got to be mindful that technology is innovating the workplace and the learning environment and our daily lives at a pace that is unprecedented. And so while we want to be able to work collaboratively to develop the right environment and have the right resources available for companies to grow in a region or a part of the globe, which we all work on, companies are not going to make that investment in your community if you're not dedicated to providing a longer-term qualified, educated workforce in their particular field of endeavor.
If you have any stake, either as just a resident of the Western and Central New York areas or as a member of the business community or a member of the academic community, whatever your interest, you're invited to take part as well. This program is for you, too, and you can take part by simply dialing in on our toll-free number, 888-639-5613. It is open right now and will be open for the entire hour of this program. And we would like to hear from you, wherever you may be within our listening area, to voice your views, voice your perspectives on the relationship between the business community and higher education and how higher education can play a role in the future course of economic growth and development in the upstate New York region. I'm Bob Smith. This is the Innovation Conversation. And at this stage, it might be important to bring up the question of whether we can identify one biggest contribution, other than just pure talent and the talent pipeline, that the academic community has made to our region's growth in the recent past. And again, I'm going to ask each of you to share your thoughts with me. And Marilyn Higgins, I'll begin with you.
It's so diverse. There really isn't one thing right now, but there's so many things. For example, Say Yes to Education, which is operating in both Buffalo and Syracuse, I believe. The university, our School of Education, has a lot of expertise in inclusive urban education. The Say Yes to Education program is literally revolutionizing the school district. Full scholarships are now provided to every single graduate of the Syracuse City School District. All of that was led by the chancellor, along with Marianne Schmidt-Carey, the Say Yes to Education Foundation. To things like, we have the J.P. Morgan Chase company, literally with a presence on campus, working collaboratively with the students and faculty in our iSchool to develop the next generation of technology for global financial transactions. An R&D company from Welsh Allyn, Blue Highway, again located on the campus, developing new products with applying the intellectual capital of the university in so many different ways. Student Sandbox. We all know how many students come to upstate New York to go to college and how many leave. Well, if we could get a few more to stay, it would certainly improve the economic growth of upstate. And that's what we're doing with the Student Sandbox, helping to student businesses to get on their feet, get some venture capital, and grow here.
Why do you mention that they leave? Well, what is it that they tell you is the reason why instead of settling in upstate New York somewhere, either in the central New York or the western New York region, they move on, perhaps back to where they originally came from, or perhaps to the Sun Belt or whatever. What do they tell you about why they don't stay here, even though in many ways it's very economical, it's a very nice place to live?
Well, part of it is just the age. I mean, young people at that age, a lot of them want to go to large cities. Even if they're from a small town, they want to go to New York or L.A. or Boston or someplace to spread their wings. And that's a very natural thing to happen at that point in life. But we also see an awful lot of people coming back here lately who, when they're ready to raise a family, because they do see the quality of life here. If we just kept a couple percent more of all of the talent that comes into upstate New York colleges and universities, it would be a tremendous economic boom.
And I guess the question that's obvious at this point, and Tom, I'll ask you to weigh in on this as well from your vantage point as an encourager of business, what will it take to get them to stay?
I think we're on the right path, and the listeners should be encouraged. Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse tend to move up and down rankings and various levels of success, economic indicators. They tend to move together. Mm-hmm. We've been in the top 50 in job creation and investment, our three areas, quietly in the last 3 years, almost every quarter. And what is happening, I think, is that what you're seeing there's more people living in cities than ever before in history. And you see those three cities are really devoting an effort to try and make their downtown, their central business district, much more inviting for both business and for people to live there. In Buffalo, we have 8,000 more people living downtown than we did 5 years ago. And the more and more we can create that sense of excitement, that energy, that opportunity, that you're not moving to Buffalo or Rochester, Syracuse for one opportunity, that clusters are growing and that you can put roots down and stay there, the better off we're going to be.
At the same time, Bill Jones, from your perspective, as somebody who's incubating new businesses through your venture creations endeavor, is that going to be an important part of keeping people here, giving them something to get into right away?
No, I think definitely, and building on what Tom says, I think we're on this kind of tipping point in which, there wasn't anything exciting downtown. There wasn't a startup culture, and we see that changing, and literally Friday could be one of those days for us that we look back on. We had a company that was formed and incubated in the incubator, was sold, moved to San Francisco 2 years ago. And Friday, I'm going to have lunch with the founder who's looking to move back to Rochester because
right in the middle of the
lifestyle.
Jazz festival. Right in the middle of the jazz
yeah.
festival. That's called good timing.
Yeah. No. And he wants to start up his second company. And part of it's the talent and part of it's the lifestyle. And, he went out there. He said he had to learn the next increment of his, business development on the West Coast, which I totally understand, but he's bringing that back, and I don't think that would have happened 5 years ago.
There is more to come in our conversation with business and academic leaders about education and economic development as we continue with the Innovation Conversation. On public radio stations across upstate New York, you're listening to the Innovation Conversation. Our topic today, the role that higher education will play in future economic development in our region. I'm Bob Smith, and we have welcomed to our program today Syracuse University Vice President Marilyn Higgins, RIT Business Incubation Director Bill Jones, and Buffalo Niagara Enterprise Chief Executive Officer Tom Kuharski. And of course, we welcome you as well to join us at area code 888-639-5613. It is a toll-free call anywhere you're listening, and we invite you to join into the conversation as well, and we will be going to the phone lines in just a moment with some of your thoughts. Just before we do, I'd like to ask about something that I notice is in the public dialogue more and more, and that is the research university as a tech hub to start up companies, to essentially incubate them, and Bill, this is basically your job, and I'd like to ask you to assess how well it has gone so far and what kinds of things you've been able to launch.
Well, the third bullet in our mission statement is to commercialize RIT innovations, which includes both patents and non-patent stuff. And it's a slow process because of the culture, and it's not something that's negative at RIT. It's the, you know, I'll call it the traditional research university. You've got universities like the University of Utah that creates 23 startups a year, according to the records I've seen, and MIT is not too far behind. But the average research university creates 3 startups a year, and right now we're at 1, but we're growing. This is a focus. We've got a number of startups, either from faculty or based on university intellectual property in the incubator. Last fall, we graduated Venomics, which came out of RIT. It's a diagnostic system for improving fuel mileage on tractor trailers. They've got 28 people now. So, you know, you go back 5 years and you'd probably find almost nothing, and you're seeing more activity, although it's still at the slow pace, but it's moving forward, and it is, you know, just by the fact that you're asking a question, it's on everybody's radar screen. And, you know, it was interesting last year when we followed the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council proceedings. I think every article in the paper literally focused on what I call the three words, commercializing university innovations. So it's more of a community thing, even though it's based on the universities.
And it seems like you're not alone in that regard. There was an article in this morning's Rochester Democrat and Chronicle from their patents columnist, Sean Lehman, who noticed that the University of Rochester, which is the largest employer of the Rochester metro area, apparently has succeeded in starting up a number of companies. The Center for Governmental Research credits them with more than 24 startups in recent years based on technology that their research has patented. Is that going to become the norm rather than the exception for major research universities to essentially become entrepreneurial?
I definitely think so. I mean, it's still limited because the people that work there are passionate about teaching and research, so you can't go in and convert them to serial entrepreneurs overnight. But we've been researching some, best-in-class, and MIT has the Deshpande Center, and they talk about 1/3 of the faculty already know how to do it, 1/3 will never really be entrepreneurs, and 1/3 are in the middle, and that's who we focus on. Now, we're not blessed with that kind of percentage, but I think we're all moving toward that. So you'll see more faculty who on their own start businesses, and then another group where they just need some assistance because they're inexperienced. And I think you'll see these small numbers start to grow, and more importantly, you know, we look at small businesses in two categories. Some of them are lifestyle and some are what we call gazelles. And the economic development impact will really come from the gazelles. That'll be 100, 200, 300-person companies. Pictrometry, you know, comes to mind locally. And I think we're going to get more and more of those. It's we've got a whole ecosystem that's developing, the Rochester Angel Network. The county runs the Entrepreneurship Network that has their final presentations tomorrow. These are all programs that either didn't exist or weren't fully functional, I'll say, 5 years ago, and now they're almost world class.
Our number is 888-639-5613, and we have Dave in Buffalo on the line. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Yes. Students basically unable to get a job these days, in that 50% of them only can get a job that requires a college education. The other 50% are just kind of displacing high school kids. Our economy doesn't seem to be able to generate enough demand for all these students. Is this academic bubble going to pop from this weight of huge numbers of unemployed or unemployable college-educated people?
This is Marilyn. I think quite the contrary. I think that the young people are creating so many new economic opportunities in the technology area, as was just described, but also in the arts and in culture. And they're creating new ventures. They end up creating ventures that provide jobs for other people. One of the things that I've noticed about the young people who attend Syracuse University is what appeals to them about staying here is that they can have an impact in a city this size. If they decide to take on a new venture, whether it's creating furniture from recycled wood or all kinds of artisan industry is coming up from the student body these days, they can create their own lifestyle by creating their own business and their own job. And it doesn't always have to be technology. It can be in the arts. It can be in all kinds of creative ventures.
I wonder if each of you would agree necessarily with Dave's premise that the job market is pretty slack. Are we seeing somewhat healthier signs from our particular regional economy, especially across the three biggest upstate metropolitan areas, which, if you believe Brookings, we're doing quite well relative to most of the country?
Well, I think I can share some perspective there in that I sit on the International Economic Development Council's board, and I was just with a lot of my colleagues from mostly North America a couple of weeks ago in St. Louis, and I can attest firsthand that we're doing the painful work of converting from a industrial base to a knowledge, cultural, innovation region. And by region, I mean upstate New York, southern Ontario. And we're doing it in a way that the numbers speak for themselves. It is, as Marilyn said, we just had our Buffalo magazine do a spread last week on all of the entrepreneurs in the Buffalo Niagara area. You would never have, 5 years ago, you'd never have enough stories to actually put in a magazine. Now you've got folks that realize that there's educational resources, there's a competitive cost of living benefit, and you can be a big fish in a small town being Buffalo, but as opposed to San Francisco or San Diego or New York. And, you know, we have similar numbers. We're generating 450 technologies, 50 new patents, and 17 spinoff companies in the last 5 years. The creative juices are here. We're all working collaboratively through venture forums and other means to try and attract the capital, the pre-seed capital, the angels, the VCs, as was discussed earlier, to make this a more viable opportunity going forward. And we got to remember that kids today they're coming out. I've got two of them, and they're all excited about doing something that maybe our generation or older wouldn't have thought about as far as doing things on their own and doing things that are very, very entrepreneurial.
The Innovation Conversation continues across upstate New York, and around the table with us, we have Syracuse University Vice President Marilyn Higgins, RIT Venture Creations Director Bill Jones, and Buffalo Niagara Enterprise Chief Executive Tom Kuharski, and you when you dial in at area code 888-639-5613. I'm Bob Smith, and let's go right now to Nancy in Cortland, New York. Hello, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. How are you?
We're doing well, thanks.
Great. I just wanted to comment about living in a college town, and Cortland also has one of the SUNY schools, and we also have a local community college, and I work at both. I just think that some of the things that haven't been mentioned are the exposure to college for some of the kids who would not necessarily go to college, the benefits they get from having better schools related to the college atmosphere, and more exposure to the arts and culture, better sports, you know, sports arenas, all those things that contribute to the community. And even the kids who don't go to college may end up working at one, so there's just this, you know, a lot of exposure. But working at the community college, what I see is students who are coming to college for the first time, and that's really where that exposure, you know, makes a huge difference. In terms of the future of upstate New York, I'm seeing students from very, very small towns coming in, and you know, and it's life-changing. And I also think that even though students may not stay, you know, and may go back to other areas, we have families moving in just because of the college town and the kind of culture that's available.
Is that something that can even translate to perhaps a larger metropolitan area like the three communities that we've been talking most about, Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse, which each are, in a way, college towns because research universities are their biggest employers.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And I think Tom alluded to something earlier that it plays into that in a very big way, and that is that all of our cities are getting redeveloped with a lot of this intellectual capacity and creativity that is on these campuses. And when these cities' center cores get redeveloped into artist lofts and into really cool places to be, that allows the area businesses to attract more of the young talent that they want. So they have a better chance of succeeding in their own ventures. Because young people, by and large, right now, want to live in greener, more creative, more lively and vibrant urban spaces than they have in the past.
And they're going to choose to live in those neighborhoods in medium-sized, manageable cities, I guess, maybe even more than they'll choose to live in New York or Boston or Los Angeles?
Well, we see some of that. I mean, we're doing the Connective Corridor here, which is like a $50 million urban redevelopment project to connect University Hill with downtown Syracuse and the arts and culture here. And it's having that kind of impact.
If you take the eight counties on our side of the state, 15 four-year colleges, 22-year colleges, 120,000 kids going to school, graduating 27,000 a year. Those numbers are on par with a Boston area in a much more affordable, manageable, can-see-two countries area that is very appealing to a lot of younger people.
Bill, fair to say that in the Rochester six-county metro area, the numbers would be quite similar to what Tom just mentioned for Buffalo?
Yeah, and probably could be higher. I think those are great numbers, and you know sometimes we do ourselves a disservice without telling the story. But you know one of the things I'm sitting here just dawned on me. You know, 10 or 15 years ago, if we were having this conversation, the whole discussion of horrible weather would have been number one. You know. And I find it interesting that not just on this show, but everybody, I'm going to say, in the last couple of years in Western New York is talking about all the great things. So we finally, you know, maybe the most important thing is we've changed the tone of the conversation.
And perhaps we've also realized that very successful metro areas like Boston or Minneapolis, St. Paul have, arguably a lot more challenging weather than we do. And let's move right now to Keith in Rochester, who's on the line. Hi, Keith. You're on the air.
Robert, interesting show. A couple comments. I have no problem with any industry coming to any area that creates jobs. I don't care if it's making widgets or making adult movies, per se. But the one issue I have with the ever-expanding, and I'll just say the University of Rochester, whenever they put up a building, it always becomes tax-exempt. There's no property tax paid. And I don't even think they have to pay sales tax, but they generate a huge amount of net income for the facility. But again, they're not paying any property taxes, so it's basically falling on to the other property owners who don't have an exemption.
Of course, in all fairness, let's face it, their employees and the people who work for industries that they help generate are all paying income and sales taxes.
Well, you're right, but I think they still might or should or consider or something, especially when the University of Rochester has such prime property adjacent to the Genesee River, which whenever that started, it should have been used for a residential basis and have people pay a higher property rate having waterfront property. And the other comment about the guy who called in about the inability to find a job. When my daughter graduated from college, she has never, ever, ever worked a day with the degree she obtained. Luckily, she did get a job and went into an apprentice program, and now she works in the healthcare field. But sadly, she never worked a day in the job with the degree that she got. But I would encourage a lot of students to have a plan B.
Okay, well, that's certainly a good idea, and I do thank you, Keith, for offering that. Meanwhile, let's move on to Elise in Syracuse. Hello, Elise. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling in from Syracuse, and I just graduated the University of Rochester this past spring and stayed in the upstate area. But I think one of the biggest things, and it keeps being said on this program is the lack of existing jobs here. Not everybody who graduates has the entrepreneurial spirit or, you know, wants to open a business of their own, wants to take that risk right away out of college. So I think it's important to also build up the jobs that are available for recent graduates to keep us in the area.
Well, I'll address that because that's my job. And as I said earlier, it is often lost, and I certainly understand your observation. It is lost on folks in the upstate area. We tend to be our worst enemies. If you travel around the country, this problem is even more acute in the places that we all have envy of forever in Western New York and Central New York. Atlanta, Charlotte, places like that, their unemployment rates are much higher. Their layoffs are in the thousands, where we have them in the hundreds. And many of their prime property has been foreclosed or is sitting vacant. So while we understand the urgency of trying to bring more jobs to the local region, this is a global problem. And we're talking about one specific symptom of a larger problem. Older folks can't retire. They can't afford to, so they're working longer. So college students have less opportunity to compete for those jobs, and then we're training and educating folks that the jobs that in many cases we don't even know what they're going to be with, you know, nanotechnology and innovation and manufacturing. There is a big gap between skill development, education, and current jobs and jobs of the future, and somehow we've got to have a national strategy to fix that.
Of course,
I definitely agree, and I think one of the biggest problems that at least I'm finding as on my job hunting quest is that the jobs I am qualified for, I am significantly overqualified for. That is, they require a high school diploma in order to get them, whereas a job that is more to my skill set won't hire me because I don't have the experience factor. So it is a tricky situation everywhere, but...
Well, best of luck to you. Hope we don't lose you to this area of upstate New York. And we do thank you for checking in, Elise. Best of luck to you in the future. And I guess quickly, just before we go to the break, I would like to know if we're going to have to change our strategy from one of simply preparation for jobs to creation of jobs. And we're going to be talking about that at length when we return after this short pause with more of the Innovation Conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Innovation Conversation. I'm Bob Smith, glad to have you with us all across upstate New York as we talk about the special role higher education is playing in future economic development in our region. With us today as our guest, Syracuse University Vice President Marilyn Higgins, RIT Venture Creations Incubation Director Bill Jones, and Buffalo Niagara Enterprise Chief Executive Tom Kaharski. And of course, you when you dial in at area code 888-639-5613, a toll-free call everywhere, and we'd like you to make that call and voice your observations. 888-639-5613. And let's go right now to the question that we raised just before the break, and that is the university's role making a transition from simply preparing people for the jobs that are out there in both the private and public sectors to creating the enterprises that are going to create the jobs? And if so, is it just a matter of encouraging rather entrepreneurial faculty members in fulfilling their own dreams? Or is it going to be in the form of real logistical and maybe even financial assistance to get some of these companies off the ground? And what does each institution do? I get the sense that in the University of Rochester's case, they're doing something of everything to help get their faculty members' pet entrepreneurial projects started, and they've succeeded in getting a couple of dozen of them off the ground and going. At RIT, what's your approach, Bill Jones?
Well, I think we are providing a whole menu. We've just started a venture fund that will be used to help seed some of these companies. But I found your question, as you put it before the break, of, you know, are we shifting from job preparation to job creation? And my answer is they start to overlap. And the way reason I say that is that I presented at an entrepreneurship class, and a professor asked me the classic question, you know, can you create a Steve Jobs? And I said, you know, I don't think it's a valid question, and my answer is no. But where I went to college and was prepped to go to work for a Fortune 500, currently colleges are creating the entrepreneurial team. Steve Jobs wasn't successful, and actually on the news the other night, they had a special on Bill Gates' 40th anniversary, and I don't know, 10 people were on stage that were all part of his team. One of the things RIT, I think, is going to be known for more and more in the future is that we're creating these people, and another one of our mission statements for the incubator is to provide experiential learning and entrepreneurship. So if you train people to be entrepreneurs, they may create their own jobs, but maybe not necessarily directly founding the company, you know, kind of going back to Elise's question, but they'll be well qualified to join startups. So I think it's going to be an interesting continuum there, where the colleges will be reinforcing everything with these specific programs, but they'll kind of be creating their own children by just giving them all this experience in entrepreneurship.
And I'd be curious to know from the point of view of Syracuse University, Marilyn Higgins, what is your university's role in all of this? Basically just encouragement, advice, or something more, maybe even seed money?
Oh, it's substantially more. It's all based on the Chancellor Cantor has a vision called Scholarship in Action, which means that our students are engaged in solving real-world problems in businesses all over this community at very significant levels. It's good for them. It's good for the businesses. Everything from entrepreneurial development to the tech garden incubation to, yes, financial help to, yes, student internships to the Southside Innovation Center, which is an incubator geared specifically to minority small businesses on the south side of Syracuse, to the major urban redevelopment projects and the large R&D projects going on the campus. So it's a really comprehensive, I think it's really woven into the fabric of Syracuse University right now. It's not in one place, it's every place. And a lot of jobs are being created. Right across the, I'm looking out the window at a company called Sterapharma, and they're a biotech company. They manufacture antibiotics, and they just invested $23 million in a plant here in the Center City. And they sought and received help from faculty and students in getting their system up and going and continually improving it. It's made a big difference in his profits right out of the box, and he's getting ready to do an expansion. And that's just one tiny example. It's happening. It's permeating throughout the university.
Area code 888-639-5613, how you join the discussion in the innovation conversation. And we're going to hear next from Nick in Syracuse. Nick, you're on the air.
Hello, yes. I'm back to keeping the jobs here for the college graduates. I have three children, two that have graduated, from one from RIT, the other from Nazareth or Rochester, and one currently in St. John Fisher. The two oldest had to leave the state to get good employment as far as what their field is. One is an engineer, and the other, very commonly, is a physical therapist, but she was a traveler, so she has worked in many states, but any state that she worked in paid more than New York. So I'm glad everybody agrees that this is a great area up and coming to work, but we didn't see that at all as far as we're concerned.
Yep. Can we give Nick a little bit of hope that eventually it'll be a favorable climate for his kids to return, assuming that that's what they want to do?
Well, I think, I'm going through the same thing. I've got one in college and one about to go to college, and they're trying to find make sense of what they're going to be entering into. I think it is, as Marilyn said earlier, if I think University of Pennsylvania did a study, if you go to California, the kids going to school in California think that Florida is cool, and the kids going to school in Florida think Seattle's cool, and so you get this movement of that that's natural. We do have opportunities, and I'm surprised to hear the I'm not completely surprised, but we are looking for engineers. A lot of our companies are looking for engineers, and but what we're also missing is that there are other occupations that are sorely needed here that are very, very well paying that we just can't find people. If you talk to many of the larger mid-sized employers in Western New York, they'll tell you we can't find good people, but they tend to be in advanced manufacturing, where an engineering degree would be helpful, but being able to actually work with things and think and have computer skills is a highly sought after skill set. And so, as I mentioned earlier, we've got an emerging a transformational change that's happening in upstate New York, and we need people that are not necessarily being trained in those fields here locally. We may have to import some folks and get other folks to return after they've been away for a while, with more experience and with a more diverse skill set, that can come back and find those jobs that may be a little bit harder to find in Western New York.
Our number, 888-639-5613. And Jess in Syracuse, you're on the line, and now you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
I was just calling to speak, as I'm a fairly recent college graduate. I'm 27, and I'm trying to stay in Syracuse. And right now I have a full-time, what would be considered professional career, and I still have to work a part-time waitressing job. And the search has been so difficult, and I just would say, because I graduated from SUNY Cortland, so I graduated from a college that is in this area, and I would just hope that moving forward, there's a little bit more preparation, at least on my college's end, for what the actual workforce is like if you didn't get a degree in something like teaching or engineering, where there's a specific job for you afterward.
The question is, do you need sometimes to move on based on your specialty? Which gets to another.
Pardon me?
Do you need to move on based on your specialty? And even if you might not necessarily want to, I guess that's my takeaway from what you're asking there. And it is an important question.
Yes.
You know,
one of the things that works in those situations is when there's more internships for people who are juniors in college, for example, with local companies. I know Center State CEO, our Regional Economic Development Corporation, has had something called Project ION that has given hundreds and hundreds of students that opportunity. And those usually do convert to jobs, and they also give that kind of introduction that your caller was just talking about a little earlier, a little more of an orientation to what the workplace is like.
And they, we all have programs like that that are starting to emerge to address that gap. In Western New York, we have ISI Western New York, which we have a very growing, robust life science cluster, but we don't always have workforce training programs that can address not just for the scientists, but all the other jobs that are involved in that industry cluster. And that's a collaborative between private industry and all the workforce investment boards to try and get the right type of training to high school and college students so that they come out and they can compete for jobs that will be in that growing cluster.
To a certain degree, though, given that each university is going to become increasingly a major economic engine for its respective metropolitan area, are we going to see that each major university's strong suits, and they all have particularly specialties, even though they try to be as general as they can in the education they offer, are those specialties and those strong suits going to essentially drive, first of all, the businesses that they help incubate and create, and second of all, the direction of the regional economy? In other words, can we pretty much predict the future course of an economy by what the strong suits of, let's say, either UB or Syracuse University or the U of R or RIT will be. And Bill Jones, I'd like to ask you about that in particular, because you're dealing with it every day.
Yeah, I think there's a natural outgrowth of the technology, but, you know, I'm a recent, you know, I've only been there for 3 years, and just amazing the breadth of the technology. So, you know, we're not necessarily, you know, internationally known for one thing. It'll definitely be high tech. We've got a strong manufacturing base. So going back to one of Tom's comments, you know, it's tough to find the advanced high-tech manufacturing people, and I think we're strong there, but it may be equally impacted by our natural resources. You know, the lack of water elsewhere is creating opportunities here, so, you know, it'll impact it, but I don't really think it'll drive it in a really big, big way.
And let's go, if we can, to Aaron calling in from Cazenovia, New York. Aaron, you're on the air with us.
Good day. First, just a slight lamentation that the change in education on the favorable side, entrepreneurship and innovation is great. On the other side, that used to be a thing of the private sector, and a school used to be a place where you went to learn and not to be a job mill. But on the practical level, I would like to ask, what kinds of innovations are the universities involved in to deal with things like horrible public transportation, inadequate satisfaction of pedestrian needs, the zoning laws that favor expansion and destruction of our nature base here in this area, which is a great treasure, when zoning laws could force attention to the needs of the cities. And in terms of things like hydrofracking, you know, are these universities behind the movement to develop hydrofracking and again destroy our nature base?
I can speak to the urban issues that you raised. I think Syracuse University is really leading the way in many ways on the kinds of issues that you discussed regarding, for example, transportation. When we started a bus system on the Connective Corridor 5 years ago, and we did the typical thing of studying who took the bus, why they took it, why they didn't, and it is a really green way to travel, and people were really opposed to it. And we've done all kinds of innovative things to encourage people to take the bus, and now we have 19,000 people taking it every year. We've done a lot of innovation in programming, for example, on the bus and those kinds of things. We're doing, in building this connective corridor, I think Syracuse University is leading the way to recognize that we need to really accommodate and make welcome the streets for bicycling. Which our cities were not designed this way, as you know. And I think the student body, because they are so, they prefer that so much, is also helping to lead the city in that direction. I think, I know, for example, that we've done a lot of work in trying to revise zoning laws in the neighborhoods that we're working in to make the neighborhoods more pedestrian friendly, more urban, more receptive to mixed use projects, that kind of thing.
In Buffalo, sorry, Marilyn, in Buffalo, the School of Architecture at the University of Buffalo, their plan for the Queen City Hub plan for the city of Buffalo actually won the American Planning Association's award for metro urban plans a few years ago. And right now, the city of Buffalo is working on a green code for the entire urban environment, which is very reflective of its name, the Green Code. And working on three, with regard to the Buffalo Billion, which you may have heard about, the three large brownfield areas in the city are also being master planned with green, green, green. So, and the university is at the their School of Architecture and Planning is right at the center of these efforts.
And as we're looking here in Rochester, Bill, where your campus and the U of R are all engaged in the community in various ways, as is appropriate to your respective university communities, what role do you see your campus, for example, playing in the future in that regard?
Well, let me go back and before I answer that, just respond to Aaron. He raised the emotional subject of hydrofracking. Businesses start because of a problem. We actually have a company that's working in hydrofracking in the incubator. But the problem is the wastewater, which is just the numbers are astronomical when you actually get into them. If you're doing a spreadsheet, you think you'd made a typing error. But they realize that, so they're working on a way to remove the bad chemicals from the water so it can actually be reused. So they're not supporting hydrofracking, but, you know, if it is done, it needs to be done as safe as possible, and they respond to that opportunity. We had a company looking at transportation, and they came up with a mobile app to tell you when the bus would arrive so that as you're at the bus stop, you could better plan your day. So these companies all come out of, looking at a problem and then developing something. In almost all cases, they're positive. The U of R, being the urban campus, is in a much better position to really impact the downtown. RIT is in Henrietta in a more suburban setting, so there's a big difference between the two campuses.
But I guess it's fair to say, Bill, and perhaps we could close it here, that necessity continues to be the mother of invention, and you're going to try to stay up with and anticipate necessities in the future. And we want to take this time right now as we close our program for today to thank all of our participants, to thank you for calling in, and a special thanks to our guests, Syracuse University Vice President Marilyn Higgins, RIT Venture Creations Business Incubation Director Bill Jones, and Buffalo Niagara Enterprise Chief Executive Officer Tom Kaharski. And our thanks to our production staff, producer Zach Seward, senior producer Mike Black, technical director Dave Campo, and the WXXI radio and TV crew here in Rochester. This has been a production of the Innovation Trail, Upstate New York's Economic and Technology Reporting Project. Read stories about the transformation at innovationtrail.org. Funding coming from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Bob Smith. Thank you for listening.